Well, hi, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. I just realized it's April 15th. Normally, we're in COVID times now. Normally, it's tax day. And I'd make a joke about that. But I can make a joke about that because this is really interesting. Our taxes for April 15th are not due now till July 15th, from what I understand. But like me, if you have a small business, if you owe quarterly taxes, you also owe taxes quarterly on June 15th, which, by the way, are still due June 15th. So your quarterly taxes are due in June, but your real taxes due April 15th are due July 15th. Go figure that one out. Go work for the government. What can I tell you? Hey, it's a pleasure to have you here on Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. We do have a great guest today, Dr. Shelley Berman, Sheldon Berman. He's the current superintendent in Andover, Massachusetts. School's near to me. I live in Maine. Okay, and he's been the superintendent in Eugene, Oregon, and over in Louisville, Kentucky, Hudson, and public schools in Massachusetts, etc. He writes for the School Administrator Magazine of AASA, which I know he is very involved in. He has written an article for us in our AC&E magazine, which I'll tell you about in a second. Okay, he's an expert on children's social consciousness and social emotional learning, and we're going to talk about social emotional learning, I hope, with Shelley today in this age of remote education, distance learning. It's hard, but we still have to do that. The kids, we still have that responsibility, and he's really quite something, and it's going to be a pleasure to have Shelley on. You can see his article if you go over to ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's in our issue of accessibility, compliance, and equity, the magazine that sits on our platform of multimedia over there, all about equity and access, ace-ed.org. All right. We're doing something different over there. We're rebranding the website. It really is all about now equity and access. Equity and access, the chief two challenges we're having right now. And as I always say, we have kicked the can down the road long enough, and we are putting together the American Consortium for Equity in Education, the American Consortium for Equity in Education. It's all about educator voice. It's all about industry voice. It's thought leaders, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to work to get the word out and work together as a consortium, okay, as a coalition to bring about equity in education. We invite you to join. Obviously, it's no charge to do that. Our magazine is always up on site. Again, no charge. If you want to subscribe to that, you can do that. But if you join the consortium, you will get the magazine in your email. We'll be push it out there every other month. It's really good, and we're really trying to make a difference. So please go over to ace-ed.org, see what we're doing. Okay, sign on, and we'll get in touch with you shortly thereafter. ace-ed. .org, and our Twitter over there is access to equity ed on Twitter. Over here at Education Talk Radio, which is a sister site of the other one, all right, and all part of our multimedia platform to get the word out, all right, and we tweet over at your talk radio. Our website is education-talkradio.org, and we'll put a new schedule up there. Okay, and we got a great show for you today. I'm not going to waste any more time. Follow us at EduTalk Radio. Follow us at Access to Equity ED. And without further ado, me blabbing here, Shelley Berman, not the comedian, but the superintendent. Hello, Dr. Berman. It's Larry.
Hello, Larry. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me to be part of your show.
Oh, you're always welcome here, Dr. Berman. I got to tell you that. Shelley, and I have to ask you something. When you send me some information about yourself, you wrote that you're currently superintendent in Andover, Mass., and then the next sentence was that you're in your 27th year as superintendent. Is that total of all the districts or 27 years now in Andover?
No, that's all the districts. I would be.
That's all that.
I've been in Andover
that's what I thought.
Years.
That's what I thought. The way it was written, I wasn't sure. And I know that you have, like, I live in Maine. I don't know if you know that, Shelley, but I know that you taught in Bangor. Okay,
that's right.
You also in Brookline, you have a degree from University of Maine in Orono, so you've got black bear blood running through you.
Yes, I love Maine, and I love being in Maine, and we visit there often. So it's really a pleasure to go up there and be back in the woods, and either in Acadia or a variety of communities. You know, so it's been wonderful returning and being in Massachusetts as well, which is successful to all of New England.
New England is happy you're here, Shelley. Believe me, I got to tell you, the only difference between the last time you visited Maine and now is that all the moose wear face masks. It's really interesting. Okay, so they're not as dumb as they look. That's all I can tell you. All right. Shelley, by the way, I wanted to mention this. You're the author of two books. One is called Children's Social Consciousness, and the other one is called Promising Practices Teaching Social Responsibility. The word social is constantly popping up, all right? And then we have social-emotional learning, which I want to talk about today, all right? And it's obviously very important to you. Before we get into that, I just want to ask you, Andover Schools. Andover is just north of Boston, beautiful town, home of that. My kids grew up in Exeter, so the competing town of Phillips Academies, okay? We're Phillips Exeter, and you're Phillips Andover. How's things going with your school district with COVID right now?
Well, you know, this is always this is a stressful time for all school districts. You know, moving from face-to-face learning to online and remote learning is a challenge for our staff and our parents and our students. But, you know, we're attempting to make the transition and at the same time, you know, provide the kind of support and stability and some sense of normalcy for our students at home.
Yep.
This is not easy. You know, the impact of illness in families, the impact of you know, people being out of work, working from home, changes all the dynamics that children are used to. And so it creates instability, a sense of insecurity. So we have to focus not only on our academic work in terms of remote learning, but also in our social-emotional learning work. And one of the main messages that I think we've communicated, and I know other districts in Massachusetts are communicating the same message, is we've got to let our children know that we care about them, we miss them, that we want to support them, and that this is we want to create a sense of normalcy. We want to continue the kind of instruction, but at the same time, what's most important is that we reach out and build connections. The isolation is very difficult for children at this time, and so ensuring that we sustain our relationships, that we bring some smiles to our kids is very important.
Right. It really is. It really is, Shelley. It's just incredible. I brought up something that I haven't mentioned, but just our minds are wandering these days. And we forget that there is a pandemic out there. People are dying. People are getting sick. Massachusetts is having a horrible time right now, with a little less up here in Maine. And with all the aggravation and the change in the paradigm to get schools closed and then open online, we forget, you brought this up and nobody else has, including myself, people are getting sick out there. People around these children are getting sick. There is disease out there. The Black Plague is out there. And, you know, we're doing all we can to help the kids get through this educationally. Okay, but we have to realize that there might be a grandparent or an uncle or even a mom or dad who gets sick from this damn thing. Okay, thank you for bringing that up. And I haven't brought that up at all, that's part of the problem. Okay, I just kind of lost track of it. Thank you for bringing that up.
Well, you know, the other side of it is that I think this is traumatic for all of us to some degree.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
to say the least.
Will take it in stride, but others will have experiences of trauma. And, you know, we have to be understanding of that. We have to be flexible. We have to, you know, our teaching online has to be even different than a normal online kind of class. You know, you just can't treat it the same way. And then when we reopen, which I imagine, you know, could be next fall, the kinds of experiences that students come to school with will be different. There will be trauma in their lives. There will be anxiety about returning to an environment where they may again be vulnerable to the virus, because we may not have any kind of cure or preventive medicine for the coronavirus. So it is a this has changed everything we do in a dramatic way.
It sure has. And I'm not so sure schools are going to reopen in September because, you can bring children back, and I don't mean to say this the wrong way, but kids are not, if they get this disease, they're likely to be fine with it, okay? And they'll build an immunity, and that's an important thing in healthcare, okay? Mm-hmm. But we can't have them carry it back home to people who have, right. who have, it's unbelievable. And somebody, I think it was on Bill Maher's show last week, they were saying, will there be a baseball season? And the answer was yes, if every player brings their own ball. Okay, I don't know how we're going to do that. So everything's just changed and different, and we just had to take our time. And I want to say something before we get into the nitty-gritty here. We've been doing this 4 weeks and now 3 days. 4 weeks and 3 days. And I don't know this well, but I'll bet you it's truth. Take a look at Andover, Massachusetts schools, where Shelley is, and look at most other districts in the country. Look at how much we have accomplished, how much we're doing. And I know we're not 100%. We're not close to that. But look at what we've done in shifting a paradigm, okay, in 4 weeks and 3 days. Okay,
I think you're really right, Larry.
Yeah, a lot of businesses closed down. We didn't close down. Schools are running. They're not perfect.
That's right.
So let's tap ourselves on the back. Not me, you. You know? Go ahead, Shelley. Talk.
All the work that's gone into professional development, I mean, we've had to bring, for just a simple example, all our instructional assistants are in our, which is well over 200, participated in professional development over the last couple of weeks to bring them up to speed of how they can participate in classes and continue to support students. Students and special needs, we've actually had to, in some cases, deliver things to their homes. So that they can continue to learn and be part of the remote learning process. This is an incredibly unique kind of experience for all of us, and we're scrambling, but in many ways, I think it focuses on the importance of education and creating some stability, some sense of normalcy, and some continuity in children's lives. And so we're continuing to plug away. You know, I have tremendous respect for healthcare and what the healthcare workers are doing now. It's just extraordinary. And, you know, many of our homes, there are nurses and doctors and anesthesiologists and other people who are directly engaged in this in hospitals and clinics around the region. And they are vulnerable, and their kids are vulnerable. So this is the dynamics here are ones that we have to understand and appreciate, but we see ourselves as being part of that network of support so that people can continue to do their work, people can continue to have some semblance of normalcy if they're working from home and their children are busy and engaged and connected. And that's the most important thing. You know, one of the things about social-emotional learning is that the heart of that is about relationships. And it's about understanding the dynamics of relationships and understanding how important relationships are, you know, not only in life in general, but in education. The kind of connection you establish between a teacher and a student is a vital connection that lives with the student and makes and helps them feel safe about learning. And there's even if it's not in the classroom, here it's on distance learning, we've got to do the same, acknowledging students and sustaining the relationships that teachers have built. So it's a challenging time.
It certainly is a challenging time, without question. You know, you're an expert on social-emotional learning, and Shelley, you know this. You're very involved with AASA. You talk to your fellow superintendents all the time. I talk to a lot of them with the help of my good friend over there, your friend Jimmy Minicello over at AASA. We have a lot of superintendents come on the show, and to a group, they're all interested in what I focus on, which is equity. I know that's a big thing with everybody. Okay. And they also are very focused on social emotional learning. So obviously that translates down to the teachers. Okay. And Shelley, help me out here. If that's the case with the 12,000 school districts, which it probably is, okay, do you know of one course in teacher education somewhere in the country that teaches teachers how to teach social emotional learning? Maybe there is one. I don't know.
Well, actually, this is an evolving, evolving system in universities, and we are seeing more courses in social emotional learning
Good.
Come up around the country. You know, there's one of the colleges, William James College here in Newton, Mass, has actually a 15-credit certification program in social emotional learning.
I didn't know that.
And we've been sending teams to that program for the last 3 years. They've actually organized a program where, you know, you send a team of four. It's an administrator, somebody who is addressing mental health, whether it's a guidance counselor or a social worker, and then two teachers. Usually it's a special ed teacher and a regular ed teacher. And we've sent teams sometimes multiple teams, to the program. It's just a powerful program, but there is a move at the university level to begin saying teachers need this. You know, one of the things we've realized, and this is core to the social emotional learning, is we focus so much on academics, but actually there's a hidden curriculum in schools, and that is the social curriculum.
Exactly.
How we relate to each other, how we structure learning, what are the rules, who creates the rules, who has power, who has authority, who has voice. All of those are part of the system that is represented in schools. And what's the nature of relationships? And so in the work in social-emotional learning is making that explicit. It's saying we have to be constructive about the social relationships, the kind of climate we create in a classroom, the kinds of voice that we give to students, so that they can be really present and feel accepted, feel acknowledged, feel known in their classroom and feel a part of a community. You know, one of the things that, and whether this is online now or whether it's, you know, face-to-face, is critically important, and what it means to be a responsible member of a community. We're understanding that now by people jumping in and helping out. And we see it all over the place. People are doing absolutely wonderful things to help others right now. And our students are doing the same thing. You know, we had some students who are making masks for others. We had students who come forward and say, how can I raise money to help people in need? You know, this kind of crisis generates that empathetic response. And the need to help others. And it's all about understanding that we are a community, that, you know, we are one, and we need to help each other through these kinds of circumstances. And
right,
when it's less loaded, when it's a regular classroom, it's about learning, that we are a community of learners, and we are working together to strive. So looking at the social curriculum is equally important as looking at the academic curriculum.
I couldn't agree with you more. And you've been in four different types of districts all over the country, actually. It's interesting where you've been, down south in Kentucky, down in Louisville, great city, over in Eugene, one of my favorite towns, college town, over in Andover, again, home of Phillips Andover, in Hudson, in central Massachusetts, I'll call it that, since we're talking nationally here,
yeah.
Far suburb of Boston. And I think you, Shelley Berman, have been on the social emotional bandwagon in education for a long time. What got you into this? What did you see, or who turned you onto this? Give us that history of relevance for you, because it sounds to me you've written books on the center. You're ahead of the curve, if I may.
Yeah, well, you know, going back to my main days, the story here I'll share, I worked in Washington, D.C., thinking that I was going to be an attorney and work towards, you know, civil rights and some, you know, progressive social agenda in some way. and ended up feeling somewhat alienated by the environment in D.C. and went up to Maine and retreated to Maine.
That's hard to believe because it's such a friendly town to everybody.
Yes.
And, you want a friend, bring by a dog, as the old statement goes in Washington, D.C. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
And then when I went to I retreated up to Maine, a little town called Corinna, and spent a year thinking of how I could make the most difference. And I thought, you know, the way that I could do that is through education. And what I understood, and I actually went in my degree at University of Maine was in guidance and counseling, because I felt that, you know, having students get to know themselves, get to be centered and understand their place in the world and how they can make a difference would be something advantageous. So I went into social studies teaching initially, which has sort of the same orientation. It's all about being
a social studies teacher. Yep.
So so it's always been something that I have thought important. And then after I taught in Brookline, I actually helped start an organization called Educators for Social Responsibility, which was all about teaching students how to, you know, have a constructive role in the world, how to resolve conflicts positively. And in my work with Educators for Social Responsibility, which is now Engaging Schools, they've changed names, but we looked at how do we nurture empathy? How do we help young people take another person's position, perspective, and understand that? How do we depolarize and create dialogue rather than debate? How do we appreciate the richness, the diversity of diversity rather than being frightened by it? So those were some of the issues we saw as core to the conflicts that were emerging between students or in society. And so that pulled me into the work in social emotional learning. And actually, it was before we called it social emotional learning. My origin was looking at how do people make a difference and understanding that we make a difference by our own personal commitments and by having a perspective that understands that there are multiple perspectives and that we have to come together to work together to make a difference.
And I want to talk to you about equity a little bit because I know you can tie the two together. But before I do that, I want to ask you, okay, as superintendent, you're a superintendent, and you're a kind of person who's a hands-on person. Quite obviously, you love those kids. You were a teacher, a guidance counselor, so you know it comes across in the way you speak as well. But now you're a superintendent, okay? You've been a superintendent 27 years, all right, which is amazing because, what are you, you're only 33 years old, am I correct? Would that be right?
Right.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So you started when you were 9, okay? Congratulations. But I'm curious, okay, to speak to your fellow superintendents or speak to the teachers who are listening, for them to take to their superintendents, as a superintendent, what can you do to bring about that culturally responsible, socially responsible, social-emotional factor within a school district?
That's a big question, Larry.
It is, and I'll give you another PhD if you can answer it from the University of Larry, which is a valid PhD. Okay, all right. Go ahead, defend your thesis. It only takes a minute here at the University of Larry. Go ahead.
All right. Well, first of all, I think the superintendent has to be really clear about the vision and stating that this is important work and really being able to give meaning to that vision, to say, you know, here's where it fits, here's how it fits, here's why it's important, and to basically say what I said before is that we have to be as conscious about the social curriculum as we are about the academic curriculum. And we have to create spaces for our students to feel safe. We have to create identity safe classrooms and culturally inclusive classrooms. That's where equity comes in. This is a major equity issue. How do we create that? Well, we create it by a number of strategies. You know, one of the things, first of all, is teaching social skills explicitly, that we can't ignore that the fact that some students, and in fact most students, come to school without having any training in those skills. I mean,
that's
some
right.
Get it at home, but not explicitly. But the most important thing that we can do is create communities, caring communities in our classrooms and our schools that actually model how we behave, how we resolve differences constructively. Discipline is, in schools is a really important issue. And do we take discipline as punishment, or do we take discipline as restoring relationships? Do we take a restorative approach so that if there's a conflict or if there's an issue, we look at how do we restore the relationship between students or between the student and the teacher or between the student and the school itself?
Mm-hmm.
As superintendent, we can, on the one hand, focus in on teaching social skills, focus in on creating that sense of community in classrooms. We can encourage teachers to include social-emotional learning into the curriculum and tie it in ways both thematically, for example, the kind of literature we read, the way we discuss conflict in a piece of literature. The way we look at social studies and how we are teaching about the evolution of civil and human rights, for example. Lastly, the last core element is, can we support students in providing service to others, which I see as really key to students living the social skills they've learned. So there's a network of strategies that superintendent can, for example, articulate a vision and then build that into their strategic plan and then follow through with the systemic supports, administrative supports. Is there somebody who's going to take charge of focusing in on social-emotional learning? Is there leadership? Can there be a group of teachers or administrators who take leadership within the district? And then can we be somewhat accountable? I know we in Andover are using a survey called the Panorama Education Survey, which looks at, key factors in social emotional learning and gives us feedback about how we're doing with sense of connectedness to school, which I think is the key factor here. Is do students feel connected? Do they feel cared about? Do they feel known? Do they feel that there's an individual, an adult, who cares about them?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that a superintendent can do by taking leadership and really saying this is important to me and to the school system for us to be successful.
That was good. You do get another doctorate. Congratulations. University of Larry loves your answer.
Thanks, Larry.
It was absolutely excellent. Yeah. So Dr. Berman, you can say to yourself, now you're Dr. Berman now, okay? Put all that now, Shelley, into this is the tough one, okay? We got distance learning now. You talked earlier about how important it is for community, and a school is the community for children, okay? They may moan and groan that they have to go to school all this time, but they miss it when they don't. Because that's where their friends are, and believe me, they do like learning. They do soak the stuff up like a sponge, okay? And talk about social-emotional learning. And this must be, your Andover teachers, I'm sure they're wonderful, okay? And they must be caring about this like teachers everywhere are, okay? Put social-emotional learning into this right now. How are they going to handle this? It's got to be a real challenge for everybody. What's your suggestion?
Wizard of Oz,
I need courage. Can you help me? What is the answer? Right. Who's that man behind the curtain? Come on.
There isn't a simple answer, that's for sure. But one, I'll give you a couple of examples. They're all grounded in sustaining the relationships and reaching out and letting students know that their teachers care about them. So, for example, we're using, in some cases, we have something that we call a morning meeting. It's part of a strategy, a responsive classroom strategy that we use. So every morning, kids get together, and it's a community-building strategy. Well, we've converted that to sort of online. We have a video conferencing where all the students get on. They go through the same morning meeting. It's the same ritual online as it was in the classroom. A little bit different because obviously, the teacher has to structure it differently and the rules are a little bit different online. But if you're seeing everybody through, we use Google Meet, but if you're seeing the whole class sees each other, they are able to communicate and have a structured learning time, even though it's you know, morning meeting is 10 or 15 minutes, maybe at most 20, but it, in an online framework, it might be only 10 minutes. It is a powerful connection. And then it's the connection, does the teacher, whether they use, you know, frankly, whether they're connecting via chat or connecting via, you know, online individual or small group online conference, or whether they're actually just calling a student and the parent at home, that kind of direct connection is vitally important. And that's what sustains the sort of, that's what brings social emotional learning into the virtual or remote environment.
We just got to do it. I've been saying the word teachers, and you've been saying the word teachers, and I know that's the crux of the matter right now. But you were a guidance counselor, or at least trained to be a guidance counselor. And I haven't asked this question of anybody yet, okay, as I've been doing these COVID shows since the shutdown. Okay, what's the role of your guidance counselors right now? I mean, other people have to be involved. We always had a big school structure, okay? So what's the role of your school counselor? I shouldn't say guidance counselors, school counselors right now. Okay, what are
You know, there's a whole network. We have guidance counselors at the high school, but we have social workers at every one of our other schools.
Cool. And I count and them in, whoever you want to count into that group. That's great.
So there's sort of a mental and behavioral health team that we have, which is psychologists, social workers, guidance counselors, and all of them are continuing to reach out. In fact, we have we've created a fairly extensive site that parents can go to. We have made our social workers available if there are issues that people want to talk about. Our social workers are reaching out to the students with whom they were in either small groups or individual sessions before this to make sure that they're okay, to check in with them. The video conferencing actually gives us the ability to run small groups so that we can continue to have that small group communication so that the work continues on their end. And in fact, it's even more vital because, you know, when you think about, food insecurity, economic disruption in families, there's a lot to talk about, and there's a lot that people are experiencing, you know, that there's somebody, a grandparent passing away. This is running through nursing homes all over the country.
Oh, yeah, in a bad
epidemic way. And so there are many children who are going to, their parent may survive this and they may survive it, but their grandparent may not. Or uncle or aunt or what, this is going to impact a lot of kids. So it's really important to sustain those kinds of social work guidance supports and for those individuals to reach out. And when we know of something, you know, we've asked families to let us know and where we can be of help. And we want to continue to be the supports that we were when we were in the school building.
They got the right guy running things at Andover. That's all I can tell you on this, Shelley. I know how hard you and everybody is working, your faculty and your staff, okay, to make things work right now. And the social-emotional learning can't get lost in the shuffle. And that's why I was I'm so happy we could do this show together. I'm going to ask you again. I would love to have you write something for our Equity and Access website over at ace-ed.org. You've already written for the magazine, but I'd love to have your view on SEL over there. I'm going to send you an email afterwards. Okay? Because you come highly recommended from one Jimmy Minicello, my old buddy. Right. Over at AASA. And you stand on your own, Dr. Berman. All right? By the way, I want to say something. You know, besides the fact that the teachers are doing such a great job with their students, let's remember they all have their kids, not all, but a lot of them have their kids at home just like everybody else. Okay?
That's right.
So let's not forget that. The teachers not only have to teach kids, they have to take care of their own kids as well. All right? And, boy, I'm telling you, what we've done in 4 weeks and 3 days is pretty darn amazing. Where we and healthcare did not shut down. We did not shut down.
That's very true, Larry. That's very true. And, sometimes it's hard for people to understand that you know, our teachers are under as much stress as any of the parents in the community. And, you know, they have you know, sometimes illness in their family. They have, you know, they may have a parent in a nursing home that they're taking care of, or they may have young children at home. You know, this is the dynamics of what we have entered are strikingly different. You know, our state has actually advised, you know, cut back on time. Don't think of this as a 6 hour or 6.5 hour
right.
school day.
Of course.
Think of it as a 3 hour school day. And that's some relief. But, you know, teachers are incredibly committed. They are a group that will go to the end of the earth for kids. And so,
that's right.
You know, and we have to be careful not to take advantage of them and to actually appreciate them. I think one of the things that's so vitally important for parents and for administrators is to just keep saying thank you for doing this work in a new environment. For, you know, here we are in a totally new and crisis-oriented circumstance, and you're just jumping in to do the best you can, and we really appreciate it. It's a small thing we can do, but it would be a real support to our teachers.
Let me tell you a story on that note about how dedicated teachers are. My wife Shelley is a big Mahoff over at the PBS Learning Media. Okay, and if your school district, of course, welcome to use that, et cetera, but that's not my point. A teacher called her, all right, from a teacher in the public schools of Atlanta, Georgia, to ask, you know, what PBS Learning Media had for them, et cetera, et cetera. This is a week ago. This teacher is a first grade teacher. Remember, she called my wife from Atlanta, Georgia. We live up here in Maine, okay, and she called the Boston number. This teacher is a first grade teacher with 25 kids in the class. She's trying to get stuff done, and 22 of the kids in the class are homeless.
Oh, right. That's right.
Think about that. Talk about dedication.
Yeah.
Talk about dedication. It's amazing.
You know, in some districts, you know, we have to think differently. In Andover, we've distributed computers to kids. We're still feeding students, you know, and we have a van that goes around and delivers food. And we have opened several of our cafeterias for lunch and breakfast so families can come and pick things up.
Oh.
You know, it is, but there are other districts where, you know, the poverty is much more pervasive than it is in Andover, and the struggles that they have, and, you know, talk about equity issues. There's a really significant equity issue. But, you know, I know that some are using their bus system to deliver packets of lessons and materials to homes. You know, the extent to which schools are going to try to provide support is really heroic in many cases. And I just want to honor particularly the urban systems for all the work that they're doing. It is a trying time, and I know that they're doing their best to deliver, you know, some quality of stability in students' lives.
Yeah, and I'll leave this on a humorous note. I read one of those internet memes or whatever that it said, now the parents are teaching their kids at home, they're going to suddenly find out that maybe it isn't the teacher that was the problem.
Well, you know, I don't want to really comment on that, but I think they'll find out how hard it is to teach.
It's a joke.
How hard it is to teach. And, you know, that's what we're learning. You know, the parents are coming back to us and saying, we're not trained educators.
Wow.
This is hard.
Look what you have to do every day. Jeez. You know, it's just, it's amazing. And it's great leadership that's going to help get us through this with great people working together. So, Shelley, thanks a million, man. Okay, I'll get back in touch with you later today. Okay, have a good one. Stay safe, you and the family.
You too.
Okay?
Thank you. Stay healthy.
Yes, I'm going to try. Bye-bye. Dr. Shelley Berman, everybody. He's a great guy, and he's in the Andover Public Schools in Massachusetts, just north of Boston, a lovely district, home of Phillips Exeter Academy. That's the big private school there, okay? And my kids grew up the other one in Exeter, New Hampshire, Phillips Exeter Academy. We can argue all day over which one's better. I say it's Exeter, but we'll just move on from that, okay? Anyway, Shelley's great, and he works a lot with AASA, et cetera. He's got an article in the issue of AC&E magazine on the AASA page okay, at ace-ed.org. And I do hope Shelley, and he tells his teachers, and I hope you guys to go over to ace-ed.org. Please join our consortium for equity, okay? No charge or anything like that, but we're going to try to really – we learned a lesson, and we're going to come out of this better, and we're going to make the difference. So check out our consortium, American Consortium for Equity and Education, over at ace-ed.org. Follow us on Twitter over there at access2EquityED. Here on EduTalk Radio, it's at EduTalk Radio on Twitter. My name's Larry Jacobs. Thank you, Shelley, okay, for doing this, and continued good luck in everything you're doing over in Andover. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.